tell us, though, about Sparks. I know that you're an underground band. What are you saying to those kids out there, or to adults? What is Sparks saying?
Sparks is a rock band with a point of view. The thing that we wish to convey is a sense of joy about the music that we are creating. And I think most of this sense of joy is from Russell's singing and from my lyrical approach, sometimes satirical, but never without some sort of witty point of view.
Sparks.
That's a clip from the new documentary, The Sparks Brothers, from writer-director Edgar Wright. You may know Edgar from his hit zombie comedy, Shaun of the Dead, or the action movie, Baby Driver. The Sparks Brothers explores the 50-year career of the Mail Brothers, Ron and Russell, who are collectively known as Sparks. Over the past half century, Sparks have released 25 albums across a variety of music genres, including art pop, new wave synth pop, and electronic dance music. Their fans include comedian Patton Oswalt, Jason Schwartzman, and the musicians Beck and Flea. They're among the huge cast of Talking Heads featured in Edgar's documentary. We caught up with him and his dog, or maybe it was his bird, at his LA home via Zoom. He spoke about why he decided to make a documentary about Sparks. He recalls first seeing them on the UK television show Top of the Pops at age 5.
Seeing Sparks on TV that young, they're quite a diverting prospect, because I knew then that they weren't really like the other bands, like that are happy, smiley, kind of ABBA, that would be, you know, either end of Sparks. So I think like I found them kind of like sort of quite disconcerting, but I like the music, even if I didn't entirely understand all the lyrics at age 5. And then I guess over like, you know, since then, they just turned from being like a riddle to me to sort of like a full on obsession. They kept coming back into my life. And in that pre-internet age where it was difficult to necessarily get information about bands, they were just kind of like a conundrum to me. And I was just kind of confounded by them and thought that their trajectory as a band was like no other. And, you know, I like watching a lot of music documentaries, but sometimes I see music documentaries by bands that I think are way less prolific than Sparks. And I think somebody's got to do a documentary about Sparks. So I think I kept saying it aloud until one of my friends called me on it and said, why don't you make the documentary on Sparks?
Well, thanks to your friend for calling you on that. Sparks' first big hit was This Town Ain't Big Enough for Both of Us. It went to number 2 on the UK singles chart in 1974. What is the song actually about?
Well, that's the great thing about Sparks, is I think you can enjoy it at face value of just the sort of the shock effect of like the music and the style. But then their lyrics are sort of to be decoded, a bit like kind of Chaucer poems, where you have to kind of read them and figure out exactly what's being said. And so to me, and maybe I didn't really think about this until decades after I first heard it, but the song is about the anxiety of a young man who wants to get a date in a town where there are too many men and not enough women. And so that's anxious enough kind of like a predicament. But then I think his anxiety like explodes into these, you know, kind of like cliffhangers from movies, like bombs dropping and cannibals attacking and like sort of and war breaking out. And, you know, and I guess the idea is that it's eventually going to end in bloodshed, that two men are going to fight over one girl. But I mean, Sparks have a lot of like don't get the girl songs, and that's probably one of their greatest.
Ron and Russell have reinvented themselves so many times over the past 50 years. They've done art pop, glam rock, new wave synth pop, and electronic dance. How has this constant reinvention impacted their career?
I think it's sort of that it's impacted their career in a couple of ways, in terms of that because they're naturally quite restless and they're always moving on to something new, it sometimes means that they haven't enjoyed the spoils of what they've done, or by the time that like that music is popular, they've already moved on to something else.
Sparks is the quintessence of a band that starts and starts again and starts again. No success is big enough for them. No failure is small enough for them. They can always move on.
So I think in a way, like, you know, when people say that Sparks are a cult band, one of the reasons is that Russell and Ron keep plowing ahead. And sometimes being like ahead of the curve can be a lonely place to be. So, and I think, I know that then when they watch this documentary, there's lots of like people who are fans of the band that they weren't necessarily aware of, probably like acts that they thought had superseded them in the kind of like the zeitgeist of like, you know, but they were actually like massive fans of the band. So I think it's just sort of a fascinating thing to me, is that like, if you go ahead sort of like breaking new ground and you're so ahead of the pack, you're also kind of on your own. And that's like a great thing in terms of being like the sort of the explorers, but also it's kind of like the sort of the road less traveled.
Exactly. And they're so far ahead on the road that other people haven't caught up yet. Yeah. Let's take a minute to talk about Ron Mayall's lyrics. They're often these surreal short stories that often have twist endings. How important are Ron's lyrics to spark songs?
I think the great thing about their music is that there's a lot to unpack. Growing up with their songs, I sort of equated them to like Monty Python albums, in terms of when I was really young, it's not like I fully understood the lyrics to all Spark songs in the same way that I didn't fully understand all the references in a Monty Python sketch, but it made me want to be smarter. So I think in a strange way, one of the reasons that like the band have endured is because there's a lot to unpack.
Sparks do that thing, it's like they have a really poignant theme and they're addressing something quite serious, but it's done in a kind of a playful, slightly throwaway way, and then you kind of think about it and you go, you know, it really is quite sad.
And people are still like debating about like songs from the 70s and 80s, what exactly they're about. And, you know, there are lots of other bands that achieved stratospheric success in their time where there's nothing really to talk about. Like, you know, like there's nothing really to talk about with the Eagles beyond like, yeah, they were huge and they did these great songs, but like there's nothing else. There's no source of controversy. There's no kind of like question marks particularly. But with Sparks, there's just a lot to unpack. And I think that's something that, while it may have held them back at the time from a more mainstream audience, it's one that strangely is winning them younger fans now. So they kind of like have a fan base that's growing in their fifth decade, which is very unusual.
Mm-hmm. Very unusual indeed. One of my favorite examples of Ron's lyrics is the song I Predict. I think the ending is the most brilliant song ending in the history of rock and roll.
Also, you're relying on the DJ to play it to its very end, so people get the joke. But yeah, the lyric in that one is like, and this song will fade out, and this song will fade out, and this song will fade out, I predict. And then it doesn't fade out, it cuts off. So it's essentially saying that your like narrator for the whole song is like not to be trusted.
Exactly. He's the most unreliable narrator ever. Yeah. It's hard to talk about Sparks without mentioning their visual creativity, which you referred to earlier, the album covers, the videos and their performances. Can you talk about their art outside of music?
Well, Ron and Russell, like, before they formed the band, were like studying. Ron was studying graphics at UCLA and Russell was studying film. And so obviously they didn't go on to those careers, but all of that fed itself into the band. So they do have a very visual sense, and that's something that, you know, is held them in great stead over the years, because they're sort of beyond the music, which is incredibly sort of ambitious and diverting. They're also like really like striking to sort of look at. And in fact, you know, their TV appearances back in the day, like, sort of would kind of make people, you know, stop what they were doing and sort of gawk at the TV. It's like, what am I watching right now? It's sort of like a piece of performance art in a way.
The video for that song was really played a lot on MTV in the States, and so it was really reaching a new audience that perhaps we wouldn't have had.
It's hard to overstate how important MTV was to the music business at that time. And the Cool Places video was so wacky and so fun.
Sometimes you get a band that look incredible, but, you know, the music isn't anything to write home about. But Sparks have it both ways, you know?
Mm-hmm. They're delivering both visual, video and audio, yes. It's clear from the sheer number of talking heads you have in the Sparks Brothers that their music has influenced a lot of people. When did you realize that their music touched so many of your peers?
I'd say with the people who are in the documentary, there was people that I was aware of that were fans, that people who had either like kind of, you know, were noted fans like, you know, Stephen Morris and Gillian Gilbert from New Order, or Steve Jones from the Sex Pistols, or Duran Duran, Nick Rhodes and John Taylor. And there's other people in it that I just assumed they were. And like, I sort of, you know, kind of guessed that people might be fans. And I was often right, like Beck and Flea. I just asked them out right and said, you like Sparks, right?
Throughout all the years that I've been making music, if you get on a tour bus and you sit on a long drive with a bunch of musicians, eventually the conversation will go to Sparks.
My good friends, Sparks!
Sparks! Sparks!
There were some people who came into the documentary simply through that, because they, you know, they wanted to talk about them, and they wanted to talk about their legacy. And I think they have, for people who, in the music business, who know who they are, there's an enormous amount of respect, because I think other musicians can see when another actor really puts the work in the way that Ron and Russell clearly have.
Mm-hmm. Was there one talking head that gave you a moment where you just said, whoa, like you were really impressed by what they said?
I mean, I feel like there were lots of people in it that I was really like sort of just taken aback to be interviewing in the first place. And, you know, like it's easy for me to get starstruck by musicians and stuff. So a lot of those people would be people that I famous to me from the TV when I was a kid, like Duran Duran or like Vince Clarke, or, you know, I guess like the person that we were most happy to pin down, because he had not seen Ron and Russell for like 45 years, was Todd Rundgren.
I was struck by the fact that it wasn't like anything else that I was normally getting. It is sometimes like butterfly hunting. You're looking for some species that nobody has ever discovered before.
I actually got to reunite them on camera. It's not in the documentary, but on the hopefully on the extras, you'll see them being reunited on camera, which is really sweet and sort of profound little moment.
Oh, yeah. We'll look forward to that. How have Ron and Russell influenced your own career as a writer and director?
I don't know how they have so far, but in a weird way, I think that they're kind of something to aspire to. Like, I think about it in the same breath as something like George Miller making Mad Max Fury Road at age 71. The fact that Ron and Russell are doing what they do now, releasing kind of like great albums and like writing a movie musical for Leos Carax in their early 70s. I mean, we would all, in anybody who's a creative artist in any form, would like hope to be doing some of their best work in their 70s. It's the dream, isn't it? So I think if anything, it's more of a sort of making the documentary has kind of shown me that like the lesson in terms of sticking to your kind of like artistic beliefs is the only way forward, you know, through mm-hmm. thick and thin.
Yeah, it's a great lesson to learn, yeah. One of Russell's hidden talents is that he does an excellent impression of my fellow Canadian Geddy Lee, lead singer and bassist of the power rock trio Rush. You've heard it, right? Do you know what song I'm referring to?
No, I never have heard his Geddy Lee impression, actually.
Okay, it's from the Indiscreet album, Happy Hunting Ground. At the end of the chorus, after the second verse, when he sings, because all around ain't the same, that ain't the same part. It just sounds so much like Geddy Lee. Check it out when you get a chance.
I did not know that. I know that song, but I'm going to have to listen to that again.
Yeah,
now.
Check it out. I think you'll agree. At least I hope so. Edgar Wright, thank you very much. It was so great to talk to you. Congratulations again on the Sparks Brothers, and looking forward to Last Night in Soho. And one final question, what is it like to release a feature and a documentary in the same year?
Well, luckily for my mental health, there's zero overlap between the two movies. I mean, I think that the only stipulation I had to make was like, I can't promote the two films on the same day. Don't ask me to do that, because like I really have to switch gears. But like I'm really excited for people to see Last Night in Soho as well. And yeah. I've seen Annette, and Ronald Russell have seen Last Night in Soho. So it's been a nice thing that we've been able to see each other's forthcoming films.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing Annette. Edgar Wright, thank you so very much.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Edgar Wright is the director of The Sparks Brothers, a documentary about the 50-year musical career of Ron and Russell Mayall. You can find out more about Sparks at WPR.org/beta.
I started thinking of them as family. We do that in the queer community, I think, especially, because a lot of people do lose their families coming out.
Coming up, writer Lauren Huff joins us to reflect on her life as a cult member, her career in the Air Force, and as a cable guy. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.